Welcome back to They Talk Sex podcast. I'm your host, Elle Stanger. This is the sexuality and sports episode. We're going to get into a lot of stuff, though. Our guest is Sibylla Baksaza. You can find her at Sibylla Baksaza, and we will put that in the episode notes. You can find her on TikTok. You can find her on OnlyFans. You can find her on Instagram and Twitter, aka X. So she is a model, a full contact fighter, and a martial arts instructor. She's a gender fluid princess and so much more. So let's meet Sibylla. Hello.
Hi, it is so great to talk to you like one-on-one for the first time. And thank you for having me.
Yeah. So we're Instagram friends. And how did we meet? I think it was a panel on sex work, but I don't recall.
Oh, absolutely. Well, of course, as all good things, it begins with Dr. Lovejoy. So she is the one who pulls the strings. She's the ventriloquist, and she plugs and plays with people who just need to be friends and allies. And we were doing this, bringing awareness and doing fundraisers and stuff for that when it comes to counter human trafficking, if you remember. And there was like this group of us that, you know, shared it to our stories. We took shots. You know, I would flex on camera, guys would pay for that and everything. And so this was like King Lexa and Dr. Lovejoy put this thing together, and that kind of led us together.
That was right. That's right. That was really fun. We were doing, it was ask us like questions and we would do shots together, but I was doing bong rips.
Yes. Well, you know me with my hookah, right? I do hookah rips like every other night with my followers. In fact, they are waiting for me tonight.
Oh my God, that's beautiful. So where did you grow up?
That is a complicated question because I was made in Saudi Arabia. That's the joke I always make. Mm-hmm. And then I spent the first 3 years of my life there. My father was a radar engineer and my mother is Moroccan. She's Amazigh. And then we moved to like California, which to this day kind of remains one of my favorite places in the world. But we spent a little time in Washington State before we moved to where my heart surely resides, and that is Egypt. And that is where I consider myself from, where I grew up, and what really molded me, what affected me, from everything from voice to custom to just my personality. So I loved Egypt so much.
So wait, where are you right now?
So I'm in Baltimore. So I'm back here in the United States. I've been here for a while, for about the last 15 years.
Okay. So besides how we already have begun, how would you describe yourself at this moment? And we will relate this to sports.
Yeah, so a little bit about me, I guess, just to kind of put it in a nutshell. As you said, I'm a model for Hot Topics, so I get to work with like Star Wars, Disney. I work with Funimation. My passion is absolutely for modeling, but also teaching what I call AFAB self-defense. So that's going to include all of our non-binaries, all of our trans women, all of our cisgendered women, you know, trans men, people who I feel absolutely need to have access to this, especially given the way things are here and the rest of the world. So that's really where my passion is. I do like remote lessons with that, but I've been doing that since I was 4 years old, martial arts, and I'm 36 now. But when I hit the age of about 7 or 8, I started playing baseball, American baseball, especially being in California, the Bay Area, of course. Oakland A's fan, rooted in Oakland. And then after that, I started playing American football, sailing. I did track and field, 4x4, 4x1, like relay racing and stuff like that. I also got involved in like different races, like the sprinting, and I did distance running as well. And then when I hit 19 years old, I made the decision I wanted to go into the United States Navy. And of course, there was a fitness component there as well, especially given what I wanted to do in the U.S. Navy.
What did you want to do?
So the first time I went in, I was a midshipman third class. And so I had an F-35C fighter pilot contract, and I got to meet the aviation community, and they are, I'm just going to flat out say it, the most toxic, insecure, dim-witted men I've ever come across in my life.
Good Lord.
So it's like Top Gun, but much worse. Really.
I don't think I know any. I'm now reflecting. I'm like, I don't know any of the anyone in that. So, okay.
I mean, I'm sure that some of our friends have a couple as subs just because that's the kind of closet mentality they all have, you know?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm sure I've had pilot clients. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have any pilot friends except for one who is a sex worker.
Any of my Marine friends right now are laughing their asses off in hearing this because they're just sitting there over there going, oorah, but... I came to my senses, okay? So like when I was a kid, I grew up with these, yes, semper fidelis or semper fi, as they say. So I grew up with a little bit in Washington State near this installation called Subdevron 5 on Subbase Bangor. And there's a lot of SEAL activity. And so those were my guys who were like my martial arts instructors, kind of my mentors. And they were so hands off. They never pushed me into special warfare. But when I decided to enlist for my second career, that is when my fitness took off because I decided I wanted to be a SEAL. Now, I was presented with Special Amphibious Reconnaissance Corpsman, which is basically a medic, a hospital medic, an HM. That's what I was the second time, that are attached to SEAL teams. And that was my goal at the time. So fitness has always been important to me, both from a self-defense standpoint and just being around what I do. And I love to swim, too. So,
Wow. Damn, you're very active. So how did that end or how did that pivot?
Oh, my goodness. So I had a great time, great community, very supportive towards me. I think that always surprises people.
Which one was supportive to you? Not the
special warfare, community. Absolutely. Because actually, when I was a midshipman, this was back in 2007, I was AMAB, male presenting, he, him. Mm-hmm. So I transitioned later in life. But so this is back in my early 20s. I brought a trans woman openly to the quarterdeck ball in the Marine Corps birthday. And we didn't have any enlisted men there. It is all officers. The admiral that commands naval training was there. And it kind of like opens my eyes. That's really when I switched from naval aviation. Just realizing you guys have the smallest dick energy of anyone I've ever come across.
Oh my.
And the reactions to her and everything. And just as a note, the Marines got over it more quickly than the sailors, which is very typical. And I'm ex-Navy, but I'm just going to say that. I do prefer the Marine Corps, hands down.
I have more interaction with Marines because I grew up near Camp Pendleton in Southern California.
My father set a record there back in the 70s with M1 carbine. Yes.
Oh,
yes,
that's...
he did. Yeah, he was a submariner. My father is American. My mother's Moroccan.
Okay. Okay. I'll say that I've definitely had clients that are Marines and Navy men, and the Marines always tip better.
You know, one of the things about the Marines, I will say this, if I ever had a daughter or a child and they said, I want to date a Marine, and I'd be like, or a sailor, I'd be like, no, date a Marine. Sailors are going to bore the hell out of you with technical specs and quantum mechanics and garbage like that, that just is not going to make you come, right? And yet Marines learn language and history and all those romantic Shakespearean concepts, right? That you want to hear at the dinner table and after.
So. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. The term devil dog is coming to mind for some reason right now.
Devil doc is what the Marines would have called me. That's right. Yeah. That's FMF. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Okay. So we talked about where did you grow up? And so you can relate your experiences from like different places at different times, definitely.
Absolutely.
What age did you transition, or were you gender expansive, or what would you call it?
It seems like the Marines and Navy are just going to keep coming up in my gender journey here. I cross-dressed was the term back in 2007, and it had nothing to do with my gender journey, but I decided I wanted to put myself in that trans woman's position by going out with all my top dogs, Marines and Navy, as a girl. And but at least it gave me a little bit of a look in and a look ahead.
So you're trying it on. Yeah.
Right. And it was actually, it started as a joke just to kind of fuck with Patrick Hopkins. I love you so much. He's my brother. He really is. I'll name drop him all day long because I'll never let him forget this. He couldn't tell. So P-Hop, as we call him, was the guy we selected to zing. And it went so well because I made the point to everyone, you know, it didn't really matter. You guys were having a good time until you knew. And so you made that Demi, that pen kind of like connection to me. So then flash forward the heads after my second career in the Navy. Kind of went through a really difficult time in life, and it left me looking inside myself. And that's when I discovered yours truly. And it was like that. It was just a very quick, I knew who and what I was. I spent time with my therapist. I talked with friends. I got on Instagram. This is how you and I eventually get connected. And I just kind of expanded my network to to both support and be supported by other queers. And I didn't even know what I was at first. Was I a crossdresser? Was I gender fluid? That's what I settled with. And eventually I consider myself transgender fluid, female, she, her. And that happens at about age 30, actually.
Okay, so about 6 years ago. Okay, so interesting little nugget that popped into my mind when you said Navy, and then again when you used the term crossdresser for previously. In my first college year of human sexuality, there was a trans woman who was a speaker, a guest speaker. She came and sat for like, I think it was an hour on the table and told about her life and let us ask questions. And she was so well spoken, and that was very impactful. All of the speakers were very impactful to me, at least. But I remember she said she was also in the Navy, and she has found in her life that there is a disproportionate amount of trans women who previously were in the Navy or some kind of military force. And she thinks it might have been them trying to prove like how masculine they were, if maybe they were really feeling womanly inside.
Absolutely. That's a very valid observation. A lot of it is the toxic masculine overcompensation from the social pressures, the familial pressures, even the bonds of friendship. You know, like I lost some male friends, very few, because I like to think I pick them well when I transitioned. But my brothers like Kwanzaa and Daryl and Cody literally never missed a step. And that is a rare level of empowerment. Now, ordinarily, we feel very isolated as trans women. And that kind of hiding out in society. In fact, there was a Navy SEAL, calls herself Amazon Warrior, wrote a book that was the most big, masculine, Viking-looking dude you've ever seen. Like 6'4", a beard down to like his collarbone while he was serving. I believe he was even like a marksman. So I think he had like a Barrett 50 or something like that. Just a big dude. The guy looked like Terminator with a beard, right?
Wow.
And ends up transitioning. Wow. Now, the whole military thing is the most ultimate statement of manhood and masculinity and white privilege in American culture. Regardless of your demographics, many of us sort of assimilate into the American culture there. As an example, being a North African, they gave me the call sign cowboy. That way that none of my victories, none of my glory would be related to being North African. I was an American.
Whoa.
And so if you take that as kind of a microcosm of this entire observation from your that speaker, yeah, that is very common. Now, as for me, I've continued to be that balls to the wall, ears pinned back, badass war maven to this day. I'm still in martial arts. I love to fight. I refuse to fight guys who are under 6 foot and under 215. If you're not a big boy, don't come to play, plain and simple. You don't have the weights. You don't have the length to get to me.
Oh, that's great. I love how you said length, too, because what is it? The critical distance is judged by the longest effective weapon brought to the fight. Right. So in this
exactly.
Case,
which is never their brain. So they better pack something else.
OK, so what projects are you working on right now, or is there anything you'd like to share or promote?
Yeah, absolutely. So aside from doing everything I do with Hot Topic and everything like that, I've decided to, after dipping my toes into the world of teaching Muay Thai and boxing at like local gyms and stuff like that, and some of the major names, I'm not going to really get into that, but it's been very toxic. It's an extremely transphobic environment, not from the fighters, but from the clients who don't take it seriously and the staff of the martial arts community. Martial arts is extremely sexist against women, and you can forget any queer-friendly environments. It doesn't happen in a martial arts, especially in the United States. There are always exceptions, and I'd like to make that exception. So I've started to promote basically like video calls, remote training, which I do, and start to shift my clients towards that. So I do like fitness and kickboxing, martial arts. It's all tailored to whatever the person needs. And of course, there's kind of a, there's another component to that as well, because I also get contracted into what's called fit doming. And I'm sure you know what that is.
Oh, fit doming. Yes. Is that, I mean, if someone needs motivation to work out, then you're the one to tell them what to do, right?
Exactly. And it has so many levels, because at that point, it's like I always say, kink, you should be able to prescribe kink as a doctor. It's so healing. when it's done safely with open communication, pre-aftercare and all that. It's such a great environment. So in fit doming, sometimes they need those endorphins, that almost arousal, that kind of mommy telling them what to do kind of complex, if you will, that really inspires them to get over the hump. And of course, when you're in a group setting, this is almost like a reverse shaming. They don't want to fail in front of me. And of course, I keep it safe. I don't let them push themselves or ego lifts. But there's a lot of different levels to this that help some people get over their fitness hump. And then I think some of them just have fun doing it.
I have a sub who really loves the motivation to clean his room or do his yard work or, you know.
That's it. It's the same thing. It's all for mental health, right? So there you are.
Yep, definitely. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. This is They Talk Sex Podcast, the sexuality and sports episode. Hey, find me on Twitter, also known as X now, at L Stanger. Instagram, I'm still at Stripper Writer or at They Talk Sex Podcast. And you can find me also lstanger.com. You can find Sibylla Boxaza on X, TikTok, OnlyFans, and Instagram. And we'll be right back. You'll hear They Talk Sex know that I am all about quality over quantity, and whether sex is a steady-paced marathon or a high-energy acrobatic adventure, Kimono brand products increase the quality of your experience. From top-quality water and silicone-based lubes to our natural toy and body-safe cleaning gel to the one-of-a-kind double helix-shaped swirl condoms or the barely-there micro-thin condoms, I love those. Kimono helps you make ordinary sex extraordinary. At Mayer Labs, we've got sex down to a science. Are you ready? Get in on the action. Use coupon code THEYTALK20 for 20% off your purchase at MayerLabs.com. THEYTALK20 for 20% off your purchase at MayerLabs.com. Welcome back to They Talk Sex Podcast. Please share or review this show anywhere you're listening. This is the sexuality and sports episode. We had a sexuality and fitness history episode with Peter D. Baker, who's a friend of mine and an author. And we talked about some of the homoerotic history in things like weightlifting or wrestling or just big muscle stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a fascinating field in itself. Whenever you have men getting sweaty together, eventually they're going to stop gripping bars and start gripping each other.
One might
hands
hope.
Down. Oh, no, no, seriously. So one of my best friends is gay, and he is an older gentleman. And he's a big boy, massively beefy muscle dude, long dread hair, absolutely handsome, face like a lion, right? And he will pull out his Grindr app, all right? And he'll say, you want to see how many of these motherfucking cocksuckers have DM'd me in this gym? And he will show me the DMs. And it's all these straight-acting toxic men who stare at women's asses when they lift.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. See, this is why I actually stopped going to the gym, because I just outright got sick of people asking me questions about my body and my tattoos.
Ugh. You know, one of the things is, so I've been around bodybuilding, NPC, IFBB, and all the world federations of bodybuilding. I used to work with, shout out to Liquid Sunrays, really, really nice people that I did spray tanning with, some of the top competitors. And I got to know them from the inside and everything. And let me just say, the brains are fucked by the testosterone they shoot. So those dudes are toxic. So they're going to be just drawn to you like moths to a flame because of your ink. And that's not right. And it's a lack of mental health awareness. Most of the guys are pretty cool. It's always the outliers. And then, of course, the gym bros and gym sharks. And those are the guys that I heckle mercilessly at my gym. I've been talked to by management so many times. They'll never do anything because they know my background. I got them some big contracts in the past when I was in the Navy. So, like, I can get away with just about anything, but I am ruthless to those guys.
This is why I'm like, okay, sometimes, like, you know, you just got to trust that someone can have a little bit of social power and, like, use it well for the right reason.
Exactly. Well, the other thing is I used to be a guy, and I used to be in the military. I was the division commander. I was a squad leader when I was a midshipman. I absolutely know how to get to men in that way that just punks them into into the ground, you know? Mm. And it's in the gym, there's no place. I hate it when people bring their toxicity to the gym. That is a place of healing, self-empowerment, physical fitness, mental and physical health. We don't know where everyone is there. There's a dude trying to win world champion in classic physique. There's an older lady over here who is trying to recover from a hip injury. We've got some queers over here who are trying to just empower themselves and work on their health. Everyone is in a different area. And that's why there's no room for exactly what you just described. And it really gets to me as somebody who teaches fitness that so many of my students are coming to me one-on-one because of the terror of going to the gym, or even it's like you have a long day at work and you work hard, Elle, for everything you do. The last thing you need to do is go unwind at the gym while they're staring at your ass.
Mm-hmm. For free.
For free. Exactly. Yeah. That's why you don't wear sandals in the gym besides dropping plates on your toe. Don't ask me about that.
Why the hell? And also on a motorcycle, people. Jesus. Are you trying to not keep your feet? Okay. No free toes, and also keep your feet.
Yes. No, I'm over ankle with my bike. Absolutely. And I make sure all my passengers are the same.
Oh, of course you ride a motorcycle. All right.
I've had that since I was 19. That was a Navy decision. It absolutely was.
Oh my gosh. You must get the girls like crazy. What is your orientation, may I ask? Do you have a
am lesbian, but I went through a bisexual. So for lesbian, what it means for me is I'll date anyone that's she, her, or non-binary.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's where it settles for me. When I was younger in my Navy days, I liked the femboys. Oh my goddess. And they liked the Navy officer boy, and they liked the motorcycle, and they liked the badass muscle image as well. So it was like yowie at that point. It really was.
I'm glad that you're empowered. It's a really nice thing to model for our audience. Okay, let's do listener questions. How do you decide what venues to work in? How do you screen places to work for in general? This could apply to sexuality venues, spaces, any workspaces, or sports spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. So I did a runway a couple of weeks ago for the DC Fetish Ball here in Washington, DC.
Nice.
And the outfits were modeling latex and everything like that. And I got a mouthful of exactly how bad men can be in sex spaces. I've never been a stripper. I've never had to work in areas where men come and expect to see you at least less clothed than you would be normally, let alone completely naked. And just some of the horror stories I saw there. I mean, we had a kink table set up. There was this guy who went and slapped some woman's ass without her consent.
Oh, my God.
And lots of things like that. So I have, in talking to people who are sex workers and have done lots of like pole dancing and stuff like that, you don't put up with that, obviously. But unfortunately, it's like this reality that you get the good and the bad mixed into it. So for something like that, I just go in with my guard up. And although I'm only 5'8", I am 163 pounds of less than 4% body fat wrought iron. So like, I don't give a fuck. And when I'm in my 9-inch platforms, get the fuck out of my way. So I was security.
Okay. So what? I'm sorry. Don't let me interrupt you. What happened?
No, absolutely. You were going to say, when was the last time?
I was going to say, when was the last time you got into a physical altercation with someone?
Since my transition, no man has tried me. They talk a big game on TikTok and on social media, but in person, they don't try shit.
Okay,
whole life.
Please don't get caught alone and be outnumbered. I know you're tough and you can take care of yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
You know.
Absolutely. Well, here's the thing. I've got Kwanzaa at 6 foot, 325 pounds. He holds the world record for curls. I've got Cody, who is probably twice as strong as he is. Sorry, Kwanzaa. We know it's true. Cody, who's 6 foot three, and he's about 345 pounds, arena football player.
Oh, wow.
He pause reps 715 pounds for 10 seconds twice.
Oh, wow.
All natural, no testosterone. And then I've got little Daryl, who's 5 foot 11, and he's 225 pounds of the most beautiful physique you've ever seen.
Little.
So, yes, yeah, he's the smallest man on my martial arts team.
I was counting. Well, it must be nice to have a team of Hulks on your side. I want that, and I'm glad you have it. Okay.
They've been great. That's been an exceptional pillar of me transitioning as a woman, especially going from an alpha male of feeling like I didn't have to lose who I was to become someone more.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, did we answer the question? How do you decide what venues to work in?
Yeah, absolutely. I got a little off topic there.
That's okay. We're
so when it comes to like athletic venues, it is very, it's very toxic. It's very transphobic inherently. When we're talking football, watch out. It's amazing the thousands of comments per season I get that we're not even going to get into from insecure football fans from multiple fan bases. Mm. None worse than the Philadelphia Eagles, however. Let me tell you. That's the worst fan base in football.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my goodness. They made a concerted effort to find out where I lived until I finally was like, I live here. Come and see me. And then
wow.
They didn't do anything.
Oh, my goodness.
So, no, that's hard. The worst one. Ironically, my enemy team fan base, the Cowboys fan base, has treated me really well. Shows you that they really are queer down there in Texas. They just won't admit it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Some people are slapping their knee and having a hee-haw right now. Okay.
Yeah, so when I look at a safe work environment, if I'm looking at, say, the office or I'm looking at a gym that I want to teach martial arts at, there are honestly a couple of things I check boxes. The last place I worked was a great environment, and one of the things I looked for was a completely minority staff, and that's exactly what they were. And I knew that they would at least understand marginalization and therefore would be open, an ally, and it turns out they were allies. So these were Americans of color that literally ride around the neighborhoods during Pride when they could also be celebrating Juneteenth, which is their day. And instead, they are celebrating the queer day using their platform and their voice in a way that you don't normally see with the entitlements of white-owned businesses. I'm going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had some bad experiences with that as well. So that's the first thing I look at. Are these people at least educated and open to queer and marginalized concepts? And as a trans woman, especially one that's muscular, especially one that's in a toxic field like martial arts, I'd rather take a pay cut of $10 an hour and work in somewhere safe like that. So I'm looking for that. I'm looking for a lot of female involvement, non-binary involvement or agender involvement as well. So it kind of shows me that this is not some gym bro environment. And the last thing I look at is skill, because skill is the great equalizer in football. And that's why I've been able to hold space with Sports Illustrated and with the NFL community, because I'm not a little girl as far as physically goes. And that's like the last thing that they settle on. I don't like her because she's trans, but she knows football and she's stronger than 60% of the players in the NFL. Mm. So that's just something, if I'm going to get into this, I have to realize I'm going to deal with. But on a private section or sector sort of thing, I'm definitely looking for a lot of AFAB involvement, a lot of marginalized community involvement, because it shows a business that is about empowerment. It's not looking to cater to one demographic or anything like that. Now, with martial arts, and it's horrible, but what is the equalizer for me is they say, show me what you can do. And I say, all right, who's your top instructor? And after I rip them in half, essentially, you know, and give them a big bear hug at the ends and tell them they're really badass and I just got lucky. It tends to set the tone. But unfortunately, what if that's not the level you want to take it to, right? And unfortunately, that's just the reality. I think a lot of trans and queer people, non-binary and agender people are really absolutely going to understand. You've got to have a big smile on your face, a lot of confidence, and you have to project love. You absolutely do. It's really the only place to survive unless you are self-employed. And that's the idea that has kind of driven me towards doing remote sessions.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, whew, it's challenging out there. So you already kind of addressed some of the, you definitely addressed some of the challenges. Do you have any advice? Listener question two. Do you have any advice for showing up as trans in cis spaces? It's terrifying and annoying and often stressful for me.
Absolutely, it is. And that's valid, firstly. It may never not feel that way. And I can tell you this, I'd rather lower my guard everywhere I go, but that's not the world we live in. There's always going to be the fear that being queer is going to be difficult in a cisgendered space. So the number one thing I would say is go in there with a smile on your face. And I think the thing to remember is that they're a whole lot more afraid of us than we are of them, for a variety of reasons, whether it's internalized misogyny and transphobia, whether it's they want to be us, they want to fuck us, that they fear our individualism, they fear our courage, because, you know, to you and to anyone else out here who's queer, it takes courage to walk outside your front door. That's courage that most people will never understand and never have. Bring that same courage to the workplace. It's going to be a fight at some point in your life. And I can attest that I've been physically, like, full on fist fight kicking assaulted in my workplace.
Oh my God.
For being trans. And that's, to me, is a lot easier for me to deal with, but it's still, it's like, I go in with my guard lowered down, and that's the feeling of being in a cis space as a queer. You want to lower your guards, but you say to yourself, you can't. But there's a difference between being on guard and simply being strong. And I know it's easier said than done, but I would always recommend that you remember you do hold space in society. You do not march to the beat of their drum, and you do not need their approval. Absolutely not. You need the approval of yourself, of people like the two of us, and your friend base, and your therapist, and all those good people who see you for who you are. So don't let the rats, if you will, into your mind. Don't let the chattering of these bigots get you down when you're in the workplace. Keep your eyes up. Look straight ahead. Look people in the eye when you talk. There's one thing that toxic men and cisgenders and homophobes, queerphobes hate. It's being looked directly in the eye. That is it's like a cat and a German Shepherd, right? How does a 6-pound cat back down a German Shepherd? Because it turns around and rears. And it looks them dead in the eye. And all of a sudden, they're like, oh. Holding space is not about aggression as much as it is the projection of your confidence and your love. People pick up on your social cues because, remember, they're reading you as much as you're reading them. So give them what you want them to see and nothing more.
Yep.
And if you need a quiet space, I always recommend don't drop your guard. Don't drop your, don't drop that projection of positive energy. Go somewhere, take a break, go for a walk, go somewhere where you can get away from the people that might be causing a difficult situation for you. And know your resources as well. I went to work for a defense contractor post-naval career, my second career, where the first thing I did was look up trans resources and just kind of figure out where does this company stand on the spectrum of performative, or are they actually my allies? And I think they kind of fell somewhere in between. So knowing your resources, make friends where if you can find some good people in the workplace, you can find one or two good people in an office, I think you're golden, honestly. And just remember, it's a means to an end. When it comes to like sports and things like that, you're gonna have to be good. You're gonna have to be confident. It's the only thing that toxic cisgender masculinity respects. But the bottom line is, as long as you keep slugging it out, showing up, whether it's work, whether it's sports, whether it's martial arts, or whether it's just life in general, whether it's going to a restaurant out in the country somewhere, just simply holding your space and being self-confident goes a mile towards conquering these cisgender queerphobic spaces. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like what you said about show them only basically what you want them to see and nothing more. Like, give them only what you want them to see. I don't think that's exactly how you said that, but I try to remember when I'm on stage specifically, if I stand up a certain way and do a certain thing with my face and just breathe and actually try to really like have fun with what I'm doing while I'm aware, like it'll be fine. They don't know I'm nervous. But we also have to recruit that kind of energy often in our lives. So I also like what you said about taking a break or walking it off, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the bottom line is it's stressful to have to act in a particular way, whether it's from code switching or simply like we just talked about, giving them what you want them to see. It'd be really nice if we could just be ourselves at all times. But I think part of being yourself is being vulnerable in the correct situations with the correct people.
Okay, listener question 3. What is a red flag about a potential client?
There are two that I have. The number one, the easiest one is learning, and it depends whether this is the fit doming. Let's focus more on that. The first red flag is just really not knowing what they want and ongoing conversation. And it just kind of shows me like, nah, you just wanted to talk to Sibylla Bakzaza, the muscle mommy. And it's as simple as that. So just it kind of shows me that they're sliding into DMs. The second one, which is perhaps more serious, is a lack of communicating their needs. And as a dom, I would always remind doms, you are the one, the sub has the power. They really do. They should, in a safe setting, in a way. The sub is telling you what they need. You are providing, no matter how dominant or service top, whatever your energy is. If a sub is not communicating well to me, doesn't have the experience to communicate well, one, my time is money. I'm not here to necessarily teach someone how to be a sub. I'm here to be a good dom, and I can help you explore your limits. I can take you to new places. I can help you adopt some healthier practices. But if I'm just not able to get through to a person and they're not respecting my desire to have a conversation on communication and they want to get right to it, I'm like, no, that's not a safe environment. I can't serve you well as a dom or even as a human being if I don't know where your headspace is. And so to me, it's communications are always my red flags with people. If they're unwilling to communicate, unwilling to respect boundaries.
Or generally, like the first one you said was time wasters.
Right. And those are those ones that like to flirt with you, as you know, while you're trying to actually have a business conversation. And it's like, dude, so what did you do? You like horny text me at 2 in the morning and it's like, oh geez, I'm talking to my favorite influencer now,
Yeah,
you
I
know?
really, yeah, that one bothers me kind of more and more. I actually cringe when I go back and look at my old social media messages, because I'll look like I went into my old Facebook and I was like, why was I talking to this person for like 20 minutes? Like, why did I feel like I
Right.
thought I had to do that? No way. It doesn't make sense.
A good client, first off, isn't, or first off, we're all rookies in whatever we do at some point. At some point, the world's best client was a first-time customer, and I'm sure they were a little awkward. But bottom line is, when you go to someone for a service, whatever it is, they've got the product they offer. If the menu, if you what you want is not on the menu, walk away. And I can't stand the ones who try to finagle like different prices or different d just different scenes. And that's the other thing. As a dom, I have boundaries too. There are things I will
Oh,
not
yeah.
do. I say it once. I don't say I told you so. I don't say, hey, I said it once already. Do it one more time and you're done. No, I block them, plain and simple. Again, I don't have time for boundary violators. So if you can violate a conversational border, you could violate more.
Okay, so how do you deal with pressure from other athletes, models, or bosses? I don't know what kind of pressure they mean, but what comes to mind for you?
Yeah,
Pressure to
so
perform?
I guess when I, especially when I did like my NFL podcasting a little bit more, there's a lot of pressure to stay off certain topics because it's sports, and I care about who the athlete is. I'm one of those people, absolutely. I'm very proud of that. There's a lot of pressure to keep things on the sports page, but fortunately, Sports Illustrated really likes the fact that I would bring up like the human equation as well. And I think when you're making content, there will be a couple of loud haters, even colleagues, that tell you have to stop doing things in your style. As a perfect example of this was domestic in SA. So, I mean, in the NFL, it's just kind of like something NFL players do, as we all know. And I'm gonna say it, not the good ones, and there are a lot of great ones out there. Absolutely, and there are some I love, like Shannon Sharp. You know, and everything like that. But invariably, if you're on a squad, you're gonna have one or two dudes. And I almost got canceled on our Sports Illustrated show because I would bring that up. You know, people would say, "Man, I love that guy." And I was like, "Why don't we temper that for a second? We don't love him. He's just a good player. Let's leave it at that, you know." Pressure in martial arts probably comes the most out of, again, insecure male toxic masculinity, where they cannot stand the fact that a trans girl can whoop their ass. And I'm not saying that there's not someone on this planet that can defeat me. I think if you do not believe that, it's gonna happen for one.
Definitely.
There are many great warriors and instructors of all gender spectrums and nationalities on this planet. I know a lot of them, but the bottom line is when I come to some American dojo or some boxing gym, I come in humble. I'm like, all right, show me the way you guys do things, and then tell me if you guys want me to add this, you know. But when they start, men invariably have to critique women and AFABs in a workplace. I'm sure you know this very well. They've got to point out when they think you could do better, and never reward when you're doing things correctly. Learning how to push back on that as a woman or as any kind of queer and holding your space is a skill. Because especially in the martial arts setting, I just want to turn around and pop them in the mouth. I really do. I mean, that's my instinct, you know? And I'm thinking, dude, I have my gloves on right now. You're going to say that to me while I'm teaching? Like, so it's just one of those things where I think you just have to realize and fight it at every level that being who and what we are in the workspace is going to come with its own unique pressures. Never back down. That's what I always say. You show them weakness once and you will set a tone in the workplace that they remember for the rest of your tenure. As I've told every one of my friends, don't let someone bully you once because you just want to go home. Turn around and say, excuse me, I love working on this team and I like working with you, but please don't use that tone with me. Thank you. Simple as that.
Great example.
If you have to address it immediately, because what starts with one stone is going to be an avalanche later. It always ends up that way. If they realize you are the workplace bitch, they will ride you until your wheels fall off, plain and simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So I think a lot of it is about killing with kindness, but also, I guess it was Teddy Roosevelt who said it, with that big stick, carry a big stick.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's very important.
Speak softly and carry a big stick. Yeah.
There you are.
Okay,
yes.
That's what it is. Okay, great. So listener question 5. Ooh, I'm curious to hear what you can say on this. Can you offer some examples of ways that you take care of yourself, mental health and physical self, while still being publicly facing on the internet?
Absolutely. So the boxes I check are muscular woman, mixed ethnicity, being North African, coming from a Muslim region, coming from North Africa in general, and of course being an alt model and being a martial artist, and I'm around football. So needless to say, I do deal with a few small-minded individuals from all of these groups, and it is difficult sometimes. I think it was most difficult when it came from my own people, and realizing, like, dudes, we came from a glorious culture that at one time had the only homosexual city that was literally 100% homosexual in, like, human history. That is my people, the Mazaren of North Africa. We used to have a city for that. And now we're at the point where if I go back to Morocco, I'll be imprisoned.
Wow.
Literally, for 3 years.
Wow.
Minimum. And just realizing, like, the world we live in, right? That is difficult. And the more queer stories I hear, the more trans coming out stories I hear, which I love hearing, and I hope I never stop hearing them, it weighs sometimes. I have to realize I am not immortal. I would be remiss to wait for a mental breakdown or a need for mental escape rather than work on it as often as I can. So I have a therapist. Get a therapist, everyone. It's sexy anyway. It's something you should say on a first date. Guys, if you're looking for a pickup line, it's, hey, babe, I got a therapist, want to go out.
But not.
It is so necessary, right?
But not literally, but yes.
Right. Not exactly, of course. Although that would be better than most of the lines I've heard from men in my DMs. So.
Oh, gosh.
But moving on.
Yeah.
I definitely would recommend that you have a support network, which can include friends, but when it gets to the point where you need help, you need to, you know, introspection, you need tools to work with, then therapy, that's hands down. But you also need to have a life besides going to a doctor's office. And so for me, fitness produces endorphins. The stronger I get, the more repetitive motions I practice in my martial arts, the more empowered I feel and am. And that makes me feel safer and happier, and makes me feel like I'm a better teacher, makes me feel like I can keep my family and my friends a little safer. You know, so every time I lift, every squat, I realize that's one more squat on the way to the top, you know. And I also do things like build Star Wars Legos. I have a huge Star Wars Lego collection. I mean, as one of my best friends said, if I didn't know you better, this would be a problem. That's how big it is, okay? I mean, we're talking literally, there's got to be, like, I don't want to put a number figure on it because I don't want to encourage any, you know, Lego fiends to come over here. Yeah. But I got a lot of Legos.
That's Legos. Really
cute. Literally, like, it's like a second house mortgage. It's bad.
Everybody has a hobby. Have I ever seen these on Instagram? I don't think I have.
No, you know, I'm like the Lego queen. Like, I literally could take that title. I just, you know, I have to add it to my brand. I really do. Lego's been trying to get me to publish pictures of this for literally, they gave up like 8 years ago, but for like 12 or 13 straight years, every year they would ask me, will you send some pictures to our magazine? Because they keep track of your purchases and stuff like
that.
Oh,
really? So,
They do. And they had seen a couple of pictures on Facebook of me kind of sharing the collection. So hobbies and things like that are very important, but it's also important what we eat, what we drink. I drink a lot of herbal teas, things like cinnamon, lavender, chamomile, mugwort, all kinds of different herbals that do affect how you relax. Just generally giving myself some quiet space.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best relationships I was ever in, and she was a therapist, we would literally get together, and you need to understand, like, we had some connection, okay? Like, we were a power couple. She's 5'11", muscle girl, thick thighs, jujitsu martial artist, right? It was difficult to keep hands apart, shall we say. But yet, we would spend an equal amount of time saying nothing. She would say, hey, I had some really interesting patients today. I don't really want to talk. And I would say, well, just come on over. I'll make the tea. And we just sit at opposite ends of the couch reading books. I think downtime and introspection, decompression, I think that's important for universally for everyone.
It's nice. It's nice how she said it. I had some really interesting clients today, because that could be, a bunch of heavy stuff. Okay. Yeah, those are great. Thank you for all the tips. Oh, my goodness. So this is the Sexuality and Sports episode with Sibylla Bagzaza. If you haven't already, find her on Instagram, X, TikTok, and OnlyFans at her name. We'll put that in the notes. Okay, we will be right back. Lots of us know to grab a towel when we're on our period for period sex, but what if you could just get the layer? Try getthelayer.com, because it's not just a sex blanket. It's great for not ruining sheets, bedding, furniture, whether you're on your period, whether you're a squirter, whether you're just trying to be polite. It's black, it's discreet, you can get 10% off when you get thelayer.com and use the code L-E-L-L-E, all caps, my name. Try it out. Let me know how you like it. It is my travel companion. Getthelayer.com. Welcome back to the Sexuality and Sports episode of They Talk Sex podcast. Let's get right back to it. So you kind of touched on this earlier, but what kinds of emails or feedback do you get from your viewers or your readers or your clients?
So from my clients, I typically get more like testimonials and stuff like that. I also, especially in fitness, I think there is almost a dom aspect of a fitness instructor, right? Because my students' life is in my hands, their fitness is in my hands. So I check in with them on the spot. So I tend to get their feedback right there. And like, always keep it open. Like, look, I know I'm the so-called expert here, but like, what could be better? Like, how did I motivate you today? Like, I kind of like go fishing for that, because I think in fitness, most students are kind of afraid to critique their instructor, because they're like, well, look at you and look at me. And that's just the mindset I like to get them out of. When it comes to everything else, as far as getting feedback from followers, other influencers, I get DMs, usually not emails. It's usually DMs and voice clips and, you know, duets even and stuff like that, like on TikTok. A lot of it is positive, and I try to read every one of those messages. I'd like to think I'm really good at responding to everyone's comments, and sometimes I literally will spend an hour straight responding to 1,000 different comments. But it does matter to me, because I've been on the receiving end of my favorite celebrity ignoring me. So it's one of those things where I do like to engage with it. So I'll get feedback ranging from, hey, you're great, and all of the positive stuff that you would expect from most of your fan base. But then I also pay special attention to, hey, I think you were wrong on this. Because that is someone, most of the time, now of course sometimes it's their ego going off and they just want to correct, and maybe even 90% of the time they're wrong, but it doesn't matter to me. If I can look at it from their perspective, I can see how I might be perceived as an influencer. And perception is greater than truth sometimes. I know what I mean. I know my heart, but how am I saying it? How am I coming off? I think that's very important. So I like to pay attention to that as well.
Okay, that's great. These are a lot of great reminders for me. So thanks for keeping me fresh.
My pleasure. I mean, this is just a great conversation. I love
good,
it.
Good. Yeah, this is really, we were saying off air, folks, that we're getting along so nicely that I think it reminds us like why we're glad we hit it off in the first place. All right. So who are your personal, who else around are your personal heroes or sources of inspiration or learning in either fitness or when you were in the military or your sexuality or as a woman now, any of it?
You know, there's one name that could answer literally everything you just answered, you asked me there. You know, with going over the things like, of course, my mother and father inspirations to me. And, you know, there was this commander in the SEALs that was an inspiration to me, like Lieutenant Commander Roberts and stuff like that. But the bottom line is there is one person that inspired me, that in so many ways created me. I cast myself in their shadow, and I'm using these pronouns. Take note of that. There was a person in ancient Greece born in Phthia and Larissa and Thessalonia, which is northeast central Greece, Elas. And you would know him as him, Achilles. However, from the age of 7 to 16, he was known under a female name that in my research has been shown to be Aissa. And he lived on the island of Skyros as a belly dancer, where he adopted the pronouns she, her, in order to hide from the war. It was his mother's decision. And his life, his treatment of women, his treatment of men, the mercy he shows to mourning parents, especially somebody that was essentially just born and groomed. I mean, especially with the things I had to do in North Africa and Egypt at the times I lived there, just to defend myself and my community. I've been around war and the military my entire life, and I don't like it. I absolutely don't. But I asked myself, how can you remain human and be in the military? How can you remain a man at the time when now a woman and be true to yourself and be gentle and compassionate? And if you go reading into Achilles and you look into their history and you look at the post-Homerica, the Iliad, and any of the commentaries of the ancient writers on this person, you're going to find someone who had the divine feminine, right down to the fact that they would not grow a beard because they did not feel the need to hide behind it. So the idea of Achilles was so anti-toxic male. And I came across this concept when I was 8 years old, thanks to my mother. So she read me an abridged Iliad at 8 years old. And then I read the full one when I was alone at 11. And just the idea, like he was, you know, like the idea that he was the only man who would not have a beard back then, specifically because I am a man. I don't need to hide behind it. And it got my brain thinking that, all right, so I can be my own kind of man and I can treat others well. And that's cool. And when I was in the military, I applied those same concepts. One of the reasons I like Marines more than sailors is that if you give the Marines a concept and you are a dominant motherfucker of a gunnery sergeant or a captain, or you can force that concept into their subconscious. If you make it cool and manly to respect women, they'll do it.
Yeah.
If you make it cool and manly to date or support the queer and trans community, they will do it. They are only as good or bad as their commanders. And that is something that Achilles taught me, and that was my style. And I certainly hope that I did him justice along the way. But that person alone is my inspiration for who I am. And there are academics as well. I think all of my teachers deserve an enormous amount of credits, if not all of it, for who I am. I've had some great teachers, whether it's martial arts or academics, my father, my mother, and you know, like Professor Kamara at my university, a lot of really good people. And that really shaped who I am. And as I got older and I realized that the greatest man in history, Achilles, was also a woman, it definitely got me thinking.
I like that. And also, I have to say, I loved the Greek mythology. I was not so familiar with that, but now I'm thinking of statues of Achilles without the beard.
Right. It's so wild, especially we're looking at like, not a dark age in ancient Greece. It was a pretty glorious age for them, but it was very barbaric and it was very tribalistic, and everyone was fighting everyone, and they were invading Ionia, and they were afraid the Trojans were going to come there. It's a big mess of some serious war crimes. And I think it's very easy to infer what happened to the Trojan women after the war. And actually, the lesson of Achilles translates to his son, Neoptolemus, also known as Pyrrhus, which means the redhead, the flamehead. He ends up with the wife of the enemy commander, Hector, Andromache, and actually gives up his bed to her rather than violate her as is legal. Again, these concepts of manhood are out there, and yet we are promoting the ones of Hercules instead, Heracles. And it's because it doesn't serve the average male psyche, but it always reminded me, nah, you want to go down in history and be remembered as the greatest man of your time or as one of them, you do it gently and honorably. And it's just like, that's what I love about ancient literature.
That's beautiful. Oh, wow. Okay. So I got so distracted. I ask every guest this. Do you have any sex tips for our audience?
I do. Let's start at the top. Very important. Guys, get out your pen and paper. So one of the laughs. I've been with AFABs that have said, so just before we start, I've never had an orgasm, and I laugh my fucking ass off every. It's so hard. I don't do a good job of controlling my reactions because I'm thinking of all the failed men in their lives, right? And they're like, oh, it's really hard, blah, blah, blah. Okay, first off, it's never difficult unless there are medical reasons for a person to orgasm if there is trust. If you are vulnerable and open to someone, trust me, it's a lot easier to come. So the number one thing I will say to people out there is ask questions, make connections, take your time, don't be goal-oriented. And when it comes to licking the clits, when they get close, do not increase your speed, do not fuck up the direction, do not change your rhythm, or you will be starting from relatively ground zero. And I'm gonna throw this out there. 50 Cent himself, right? We know he doesn't know how to give oral because he specifically said, get you real close, then switch it up. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
So, Fitty, you need to take some notes.
Thank you. Okay, so that's one.
I love his music, though. Creating the environment of sex is so. Now, there are times where I've jumped off the motorcycle and barely made it to the bedroom with my partner. That's fucking glorious. I love it. There's never, as long as you're not involving people in the public, especially kids, you should be very conscientious, anybody who's into public sex, of where you are. But generally speaking, I think every place, within reason is a good place to have sex. So I'm not even talking about that. What I'm talking about is when you get the time, setting up the environments, when it comes to massages and candles and roses and incense, learn what their olfactory preferences are. For me, it's gonna be rose. That is my symbol flower,
Rose.
especially pink ones. Yes. Learning things that are special to your partner and including them in the aromatherapy and even like the foreplay and even aftercare and precare. There are foods, there are scents, there are drinks, there are wines, there are visuals, there are colors, there's lighting. You can play with all these things. Learning not just to do it your way. One of the mistakes I've had with some of my guy friends is that they've got their way of doing it.
Oh
All right.
no, 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 no.
Right. So
Toss that out.
it's candlelight and rose petals on the bed. That sounds pretty cool, but that's vanilla as fuck as far as I'm concerned. But just realizing, as guys especially, it's not a shot at your ego when she says, hey, can you change your technique? That's called feedback. And you need to engender safe feedback in order to have a good result. And that, I think, is probably my mic drop sex tip.
I love that. Thank you so much for being here, Sibylla. We had such a nice time, I think. This was the sexuality and sports episode. So find Sibylla on Instagram, X, TikTok, OnlyFans, and keep kicking ass and being safe and spreading joy and love.
Likewise, Elle. And Elle, this was great. I mean, it was hardly a podcast for me. It was just good time with one of the best people I know.
Oh, shoot. Well, let's do
And
something cool
let me
again.
just say this. I know it's your show, but for the people who are listening here, I know you guys are big Elle fans. This is a really good person. This is a person who does a lot for our community, and a lot of my followers follow them. And they are such a fixture in our community. And I really feel like you do a lot of helping society decolonize, destigmatize, and learn actual safe information. And it's more than decriminalizing the sex workers industry, because we need it. It's a beautiful industry, especially when we empower it. Mm. It's not about legalizing it. It is about decriminalizing it, but you take it a step further. And you, that is by education. And you go back into ancient times. You drop the Bible sometimes and call that shit out. So that is just, you know, you talk to me how I deal with hate. I don't know how you can push that envelope so well.
Wow.
But bravo, truly.
Thank you. I bow my head humbly, and I'm going to keep trying to earn that, because that was some beautiful, beautiful praise. Thank you very much, Sibylla. Thank you, everybody.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being here, and I will see you on the internet. Until next
Jupiter time. Prison power.
Yay!